So I think everybody knows who Mr. Scrooge is, yeah? And what he's famous for. What is Mr. Scrooge famous for?
Unhappiness at Christmas.
Unhappiness at Christmas.
And all year round.
And all year round.
All year round.
Mean. Stingy.
Stingy, yeah. Okay.
And
that's, it's important that we remember all that. That's what Mr. Scrooge is famous for. So, do you all know the story of A Christmas Carol? You don't know the story of A Christmas Carol, don't you?
It's a quick reminder.
You want a quick reminder. Okay. Does anyone know what the first line of the story is? What's the first thing you think?
Marley was dead to begin with.
Okay, somebody knows the story off by heart.
Say that again. Marley was dead
to begin with.
Yes, that's exactly what it says. That's the first line. Marley was dead to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it, and Scrooge's name was good upon exchange for anything he chose to put his hand to. Mm-hmm. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. Uh-huh. And then Dickens goes on to say, he says, I don't know why they say a doornail. Why is a doornail any more dead than any other kind of nail? Anyway, that's Dickens just having a little bit of fun. He says, why not a coffin nail? Anyway, so Marley was dead. Marley was the business partner of Scrooge. And he had died exactly 7 years previously on Christmas Eve. 7 years previously, Marley had died. Scrooge had not changed the sign above the business. It still said Scrooge and Marley, although Marley had been dead for 7 years. So Scrooge, there's a little description of Scrooge, which fits very well with what you've been saying. Maybe it's even more. He was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. Hard and sharp as flint, from which no steel had ever struck out generous fire. Secret and self-contained and solitary as an oyster. The cold within him froze his old features, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheek, stiffened his gait, made his eyes red, his thin lips blue, and spoke out shrewdly in his grating voice. A frosty rime was on his head and on his eyebrows and his wiry chin. He carried his own low temperature always about with him. He iced his office in the dog days and didn't thaw it out 1 degree at Christmas. So that was Scrooge. That's how he's described by Dickens. Very cold. So he just uses cold. Dickens uses this image of cold, cold, cold for Scrooge. And then, so Scrooge is in his office. And he's in his office with his clerk, who's Bob Cratchit. And he has a little fire in the grate, a few coals. And Bob Cratchit has an even smaller fire. It's just one coal. But he can't get any more coal because the coal bucket is in Scrooge's office. And Scrooge always threatens to sack him if he goes for any more coal. So Bob Cratchit is trying to warm his hands on the candle, which Dickens says he fails to do because he has insufficient imagination. So that's the scene in the office. And then the door bursts open and in comes Scrooge's nephew. And his nephew is hale and hearty and full of Christmas cheer and says, Merry Christmas, Uncle! And his nephew is, he's full of bonhomie. But Scrooge says, what does he say?
Bah,
humbug. What have you got to be merry about? You're poor, and you're no richer now than last year, and Christmas just means more bills to pay, and so on. So he completely pushes back at his nephew. And his nephew doesn't know why is Scrooge being like that. His nephew says to him that he intends to be merry anyway, and he asks him, invites him to dinner Christmas Day. So we'll come to that later on. After his nephew is leaving, two more people come into the office. A couple of what we could call fundraisers. They're a couple of men. They're going around gathering money for the poor. They want to give food and shelter to those who are poor at Christmas. And Scrooge is the fundraiser's nightmare. He's just completely. So they ask, you know. Well, the first thing they ask him is it Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley? And he says, that's when Scrooge tells us, he says, Marley died 7 years ago today. And they say something like, well, I'm sure his surviving partner will be just as generous or something. Of course, Marley was never very generous either. Anyway, they say to Scrooge, what shall we put you down for? And Scrooge says, nothing. And he says, oh, you want to be anonymous? He says, I want to be left alone. So they get absolutely nothing from Scrooge. So they leave completely, again, kind of not sure what they've just met, as it were. So after that, I'm not going to tell the whole story. Scrooge, Bob Cratchit leaves, goes home. He's away for Christmas. He won't be back till Boxing Day. Scrooge locks up his office and heads off home down this really dark alleyway where he has to feel his way. It's so dark, he has to feel along the wall to actually get to the house. And he gets this old house, which is completely dark and tumble down. Dickens says something like, it's an old house that when it was young, it went out to play and got lost, and it was still lost. So there's this old ramshackle house. This is where Scrooge lives alone, in this big old house that's completely dark. It says Scrooge likes the dark because it's cheap. And as he comes up to the door, and there's a big door knocker, and just as he's coming to the door, he sees the face of Marley in the door knocker, the face of his partner, business partner. Marley is there, the door knocker, and he doesn't know what to make of that. But it fades away, and he opens the door, and he looks at it, and he says to himself, he says, humbug. And he walks up this dark stairs up to his room, dark wooden creaking stairs up to his rooms. When he gets to his rooms, he does double lock the door, and he checks every room in his little flat or whatever. He checks all the rooms. But as he's sitting there having his gruel beside the fire, his gruel out of his bowl, as he's sitting there, he hears this noise in the house. His first thing is like bells ringing all over the place, and then there's this clanking like someone dragging chains across a stone floor, and this noise comes up and up and up closer to him, and eventually the ghost of Marley appears in his room, the ghost of Jacob Marley, the ex-business partner. And he's wrapped in these big chains, and out of the chains, there are padlocks and cash boxes, all these things hanging out of the chains behind Marley. So I've got a couple of little quotes about Marley. I don't know if I have the one about his chains. The chain he drew was clasped about his middle. It was long and wound about him like a tail. It was made, Scrooge observed it closely, it was made of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel. So that was this chain that Marley was pulled by. So Scrooge has a conversation with the ghost. He's obviously very frightened, but nevertheless he thinks to himself, this is probably just something I've eaten. It's probably just a bit of bad cheese or something. It's giving me nightmares. So he has a conversation with the ghost. And one of the things the ghost says to him, he says, it's required of every man that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide. And if that spirit does not go forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world, oh, woe is me, and witness what it cannot share, but might have shared on earth, and turned to happiness. So this is why Marley is wandering as a ghost, because he never shared his life, as it were, when he was alive. And he says to Scrooge asks him, well, why have you got this chain? Why are you fettered? And he says, I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you? He says to Scrooge. And it says, Scrooge trembled more and more. So he's getting a warning from the ghost. So Marley's ghost tells him, well, he says, I'm here, because Scrooge asks him, why are you here? He says, I'm here for your welfare. And he says, you're going to be visited by three spirits, three ghosts. And Scrooge says, I'd rather not. it says he thinks to himself, I'd rather have a good night's sleep. But anyway, Marley's ghost says that's what's going to happen. He's going to be visited by three ghosts. One of the other things that Marley's ghost says to him is because Scrooge says to him, you were always a good man of business, Jacob. And Marley's ghost says, business? Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. So he's saying he didn't really attend to his business, what his business really was. So Scrooge is visited by the three ghosts, the ghost of Christmas past, the ghost of Christmas present, and the ghost of Christmas yet to be. He's visited by these three ghosts. And, why is that for his welfare? It's because what the three ghosts do is they give him a complete overview, as it were, of his life, yeah? The past, the present, and future. The future, as it will unfold, based on his present actions and his present attitudes and so on. So you could think of this as like a sort of visionary experience that Scrooge is having. He's having this vision of his whole life passing before him. So the ghost of Christmas past turns up, which is a very small, like a little old wizened man, the ghost of Christmas past. The ghost of Christmas past shows him his childhood, and it shows him his apprenticeship when he was like a teenager probably, and then his young adulthood and so on. And in his childhood, he was a very lonely child. His mother had died, his father was a very distant figure who had sent him off to some kind of school or something like that. And the scene that the ghost shows him is of himself as a young boy sitting alone in this schoolroom. All the other boys have gone home, and he hasn't gone home. But his sister turns up. He's got a young sister, Fan. And this young sister is the only person in the world, really, that loves him and that he loves, is his young sister. And she turns up and says, "You're to come home." She said, "Father is much softened, and I was able to ask him if you could come home, and he said yes, and he sent me in the carriage to collect you." But before that, we saw this very lonely boy who was taking solace in reading books of fairy tales, and he, like the characters in the books were his friends, like Ali Baba and so on. These were his friends. But he was a very lonely boy in this school, unloved, as it were. So he goes home with his sister, and then he becomes an apprentice. He's an apprentice in the workshop of Mr. Fezziwig. The next scene we see is Christmas, because it's all about Christmases, so the lonely boy was at Christmas, and then there's Mr. Fezziwig's at Christmas. And Mr. Fezziwig treats everybody really well at Christmas and puts on a big party for them, and they have a dance, and the apprentices are really happy. There's a little scene where the two apprentices, everybody's gone home, and the two apprentices are just talking and excited about what a good evening they've had and how well Mr. Fezziwig has treated them and so on. And the ghost says to Scrooge, says, you boys were very easily pleased. He hasn't done very much for you. He's only spent a few shillings and you're so easily pleased. And Scrooge really protests at this because he has something to say about he defends Mr. Fezziwig, which is quite an important bit in a way. He says, "It isn't that," said Scrooge, heated by this remark, the remark that the ghost had made, and speaking unconsciously like his former, not his latter self. "It isn't that, spirit. He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. Say that his power lies in words and looks, in things so slight and insignificant that it is impossible to add and count them up. What then? The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune." So Scrooge is saying to the ghost, well, Mr. Fezziwig made us happy because of the way he treated us. It was nothing to do with money or anything like that. So Scrooge is learning something. This is what we're getting from this. And then the next scene is where we see an older version of Scrooge, and he's with his fiancée, and she's leaving him. And the reason she's leaving him is she says she has been replaced in his affections. And what has replaced her? Money. He's become obsessed with money. And she says, well, you're not like the person you used to be, so we can't be together. And he says, I'm wiser now. So he equates his obsession with money as wisdom. You know? So the ghost of Christmas past is showing him this, showing him how he was. We learn a few things about Scrooge from this. One of the things we learn, and I didn't say it, but we learn that the sister that he really loves and loves him has died. So that's one of the things, obviously, that's affected him. Yeah, it's not spelled out, but he's been affected by the fact that his sister has died. And of course, his mother had died as well. We also get a hint that actually it may be that she died in childbirth. so that the nephew, the nephew who came to his office, who was full of the joys of life, may be a reminder to Scrooge of his sister, who was so important to him when he was younger. So we're getting a little bit of an insight into Scrooge and why Scrooge may be the way he is. It's like some people, when bad things happen to them, as it were, they might turn to drink or drugs or whatever. Scrooge has turned to money. He's become obsessed with money and making money. That's for its own sake, as it were. He doesn't spend money at all, not even on himself. He just accumulates. So the effect on him, the effect on Scrooge of seeing his past like this, is it starts to melt his heart a bit. So that's seeing Fezziwig and seeing himself as a boy and so on starts to melt his heart a bit. He has a bit of sympathy for himself as a child. And he also kind of starts to see a little bit what a difference he could make to Bob Cratchit's life. Yeah, he's starting to starting to make inroads into him, as it were. Yeah. So then the Ghost of Christmas Present turns up. The Ghost of Christmas Present is a huge, giant kind of glowing figure and appears in Scrooge's apartment with lots of light and a big blazing fire and lots of food and all sorts. So it's a very kind of copious kind of figure, the Ghost of Christmas Present. And the Ghost of Christmas Present again takes him off to show him some scenes. And the first place they go, if I remember rightly, is to Bob Cratchit's. And they see Bob Cratchit and his family getting everything together, their Christmas dinner. Even though they're incredibly poor, they're happy and joyful. And there's the little boy, Tiny Tim, who's crippled, who's got a metal thing on his legs to help him to stand up and so on. And they're just a very kind of warm, affectionate, loving family, the Cratchit family. And they're all sort of there when Bob comes home from work. He runs all the way home from his office to in the city of London, to Camden Town. He runs all the way. He slides down the slide on Cornhill 20 times, he said, in honour of the day. Yeah. So Bob is quite happy. He gets home and joins his family. So Scrooge comes in and sees them all with the ghost, shows him the Cratchit family sitting around. And at one point they drink a toast. They're drinking toast. And at one point they drink a toast to Mr. Scrooge, Bob Cratchit says. Mr. Scrooge, the founder of the feast. And Bob Cratchit's wife turns to him and said, I don't know exactly how she said it, but she didn't really want to drink a toast to Mr. Scrooge because he's such a miserable miser and so on. Bob Cratchit says, but it's Christmas, my dear, it's Christmas. So they all drink to Mr. Scrooge. So Scrooge sees them drinking a toast to his health. And the next place the Ghost of Christmas Present takes them is to his nephew's house, Scrooge's nephew. And again, they're all having fun. They've got visitors and so on, but they're playing games and enjoying themselves. And they also talk about Scrooge. They play, what's that game, Animal, Mineral, Vegetable or something like that, where they ask questions, but in this particular game it's animal. But it turns out that what it is Mr. Scrooge is the answer. Mr. Scrooge is there. Anyway, and Mr. Scrooge, who's there with the ghost on scene, he actually really enjoys it, and he feels like he wants to applaud them and so on for the things. So he's really warming up. So in a way, the Ghost of Christmas present is showing him what he's missing. Yeah, what he's missing by being so kind of cold and isolated and all the rest of it. Showing people enjoying themselves. So a lot of it is showing people just enjoying themselves in spite of the weather, because it's really cold, in spite of their poverty. He's showing him people seeing the world through the eyes of goodwill, as it were. There's a bit describing some people clearing the snow off the roofs of the houses. There's even a picture that you probably can't make it out. He says the people were shoveling away on the housetops, were jovial and full of glee, calling out to one another from the parapets and now and then exchanging a facetious snowball, a better-natured missile far than many a worthy jest, laughing heartily if it went right and not less heartily if it went wrong. So the people are out there and they're cold and they're working, but they're very happy and full of the joys of life, as it were. So this is what the ghost of Christmas present is showing to Scrooge. And I was thinking about this as I was reading it, and I was thinking you could see this really, that it's in some level Scrooge knows all of this already. He knows all of this, so it's almost like the ghost is his kind of unconscious mind rising up, as it were. He knows all of this. And the ghost is giving him this kind of objectivity about his life and a kind of something about a truth that he's been evading or avoiding, but he needs to come into contact with. Then the ghost of the future. The ghost of the future, of course, is showing him what his life will be. If he carries on as he will. But actually what the ghost of the future shows him is death. So the scene he shows him is a dead body in a really bleak, empty room. Scrooge doesn't know who this person is, this lying dead. But what he does see is that all the curtains from around, it's like one of those four-poster beds with curtains, all the curtains have been taken. There's pretty much nothing left. It's just the bedclothes have been taken. It's just a sheet over the body. So everything has been taken. And it's just this dead body. And the ghost of Christmas future is completely silent and just points. It doesn't say. Scrooge is asking questions all the time. Who is that? But the ghost just points. And Scrooge says he says to the ghost, I can't take the sheet away. He couldn't look at the face. So the ghost of Christmas future takes him to, I'll miss out that scene. I mentioned it. There's a scene where there's these people who are sharing out all these belongings of the person who's dead. They're selling them, basically. In a kind of back street, you know, very kind of grubby situation where they're saying, actually, it reminded me, for some reason, of Christ on the cross and the people selling or whatever his clothing. Anyway, so these people are selling all this, and they're saying, well, he was such a miserable skinflint. It's all he deserves, really. We sell his things. Then the ghost of Christmas yet to be takes him to a cemetery and takes him to the headstone and points. And of course Scrooge goes up to read it, and it says on the headstone, Ebenezer Scrooge. So he realizes that it's himself who's going to die in this kind of completely cold and neglected and unwanted way. And he's so horrified by what he sees, that he pleads with the ghost. And I'll just see if I can find that. He says, this is Scrooge speaking, men's courses will foreshadow certain ends to which, if persevered in, they must lead, said Scrooge. But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus with what you show me. So he's asking the ghost of Christmas yet to be, saying, tell me that if I change things, then things will work out differently. The spirit was immovable as ever. So the spirit didn't speak, doesn't speak. Scrooge tries to grab the spirit, but it turns into his bedpost. And he wakes up in his own bed, and he's absolutely full, he's absolutely delighted. Yeah, one, that he's awake and that he's in his own bed and so on. And there's a huge change takes place in Scrooge. It's been happening gradually as each ghost has shown him something different. It's been happening gradually. But then there's this huge change takes place. And it says he just bursts out laughing. And he laughs, and Dickens says, for somebody who hasn't laughed for such a long time, he's got a fantastic laugh. Yeah? He laughs really loudly and well. And he's just like dancing for joy. He's just dancing around the place. And he goes to the window, because he doesn't know what day it is or anything. And he sees a boy outside, and in his Sunday best, he says, and he shouts out to him, what day is it? And the boy looks at him completely surprised. Christmas Day! And so he asked the boy, is that big turkey still in the shop round the corner? And the boy says, yes. And he says, well, if you get it for me, I'll give you a shilling. If you bring it back within 5 minutes, half a crown. And the boy is back in 4 minutes with the turkey. Yeah? Which Scrooge sends to Bob Cratchit in Camden Town by a carriage and says, don't say who sent it. And then he goes off to visit his nephew. He goes to his nephew's, and he says he walks up and down outside half a dozen times before he plucks up the courage to go in. And then he goes in and he joins them. He says, I've come for dinner, and can I come in? And they are really delighted to see him and welcome him in. So he has a great Christmas dinner and Christmas with his nephew and the family. And then the next day, he gets into work early because he wants to be in before Bob Cratchit. He kind of wants to play a joke on Bob Cratchit in a way. It's a bit of a cruel joke in a way, but he gets in early. And Bob Cratchit turns up late for work. It's like he's not there at 9:15. 18 minutes past nine, and Bob Cratchit turns up. So Scrooge kind of is pretending that he's really cross and annoyed with him. And he says to Bob, what's this, coming in so late? And Bob says, well, it's just once a year. It won't happen again. And Scrooge says, well, I'm not going to put up with this. I'm going to raise your salary. I'm going to do it this afternoon. And so Bob Cratchit is not sure whether he should knock him down and shout for help because he thinks Scrooge has gone mad. Yeah? But Scrooge is absolutely serious, and he says, we're going to go out this afternoon and we're going to have big lunch, and I'm going to talk to you about your future. And it says that he was as good as his word. And he did that, and he did a lot more. And so Scrooge changed. He changed completely. And it's just various things. He said, just as after his change, it says he went to church, walked about the streets, watched the people hurrying to and fro, patted the children on the head, questioned beggars, looked down into the kitchens of houses and up to the window, and found that everything could yield him pleasure. He had never dreamed that any walk, that anything could give him so much happiness. So he says, like, he's having this experience of when you're in this really positive state, everything can give you pleasure. Everything can be delightful. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him. But he let them laugh, and little heeded them. For he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good at which some people did not have their fill of laughter. And knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins as have the malady in less attractive forms. His own heart laughed, and that was good enough for him. So that's the story, basically, of Scrooge with his three ghosts. And I suppose that last ghost, the ghost of the future, was showing him the consequences of his actions, his attitude and so on, the consequences of cutting off from life and from all the warmth and of friendship and connection and so on. And how that would lead to a cold and lonely death. So what do we see in this story? We see someone gaining self-knowledge, basically. Someone being given a lesson. And if you're to put it in Buddhist terms, and be given a lesson about karma and karma vipaka, about, you know, the actions and consequences of actions. But I think one of the things at the beginning is just how important it is to see your own life and your own the conditions that have led to being a particular way. Because he's obviously somebody who hadn't been in the habit of reflecting or thinking or whatever. So this ghost of Christmas past represents this kind of reflection on his life. And seeing it more clearly, bringing out things. As I said at the beginning, it's a bit like a visionary experience in which he kind of, things start to come out of the unconscious, as it were, and become more apparent to him. So this vision he's had of the past, present and future, it has the force of a kind of insight experience, like a deep insight experience. He's relieved to find that he has the opportunity to make amends in a way. And one of the things I didn't mention is that he bumps into the man who was the fundraiser. He bumps into him in the street and he apologizes and he whispers in his ear a sum of money. He says something like, "Would you be so good as to accept?" And he whispers in his ear. The man is completely astonished and Scrooge said, "Oh, it's got lots of back payments in it." So he really is trying to make up for his past heartlessness and lack of generosity. And yes, he does raise Bob Cratchit's salary. He says of himself when he wakes up from this thing, he says, "I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. I'm as giddy as a drunken man. I don't know what to do." He's just so happy. He doesn't know what to do. However, Scrooge is remembered by everyone, as we saw at the beginning, as a miser. That's what you all think of Scrooge, isn't it? He was a miser, an archetypal miser. But actually, he was something different. He became something different. So I think there's a lesson there about reputation, isn't there? You know, someone's got a really bad reputation, it sticks with them. Yeah? Very hard to shift, however much to change. Huh?
Something about his name.
Well, his name has become associated with his reputation as well. But also there was something about that thing in the end where people laughed. Because actually other people don't necessarily want him to change, or it makes them uncomfortable that he's changed, because actually a lot of the people that he would be mixing with are similar in a way. They're similar, and you get that impression when the news goes out in the Ghost of Christmas Future. There's a scene where people in the business world, as it were, hear the news that he's dead, and they're very kind of offhand about it, and they just talk about his money or something like that. So they're actually quite similar people. And so they don't necessarily want him to change. That change is, it's either something people don't believe in, that it can happen, so they could be quite cynical about it, or it's something that's too close to the bone, as it were, and makes them uncomfortable that someone from their midst has changed like that. I mean, sometimes where this comes up for us in a lesser way is sometimes our families or something like that don't necessarily either believe that we're changed or want us to change, yeah, that kind of thing. The moral of the tale here is that people can change, yeah. And also the moral of the tale, you could say, is you can't really tell why people are the way they are unless you know quite a lot about their lives, as it were. You know, the what people are presenting to the world is just the end product of lots of different conditions, which could be a lot of different suffering, which it seems to be in Scrooge's case, that actually he had a lot of suffering in his life, and particularly the death of his sister, I think that was what turned him into the miser. So maybe that tells us something about the importance of life stories, for instance, telling our life story, reflecting on our life story as part of our practice and so on. And I think I was thinking about this, that actually I think a key figure or a key character in this whole story is Mr. Scrooge's nephew. Because I think, in a way, you could say it's his nephew who possibly has awakened this something in him. Because although Scrooge responds to him quite harshly with "bah, humbug," and, you know, he tries to get rid of him out of his office, in a way you can see by the way that Scrooge is trying to get rid of him that he's getting to Scrooge, he's pressing the buttons, as it were. So by the time Scrooge gets home and goes to bed or whatever, something has been activated in him by his nephew. And of course also his nephew is somebody who reminds him of his sister, of this kind of big suffering in his life, the loss of his younger sister. Yeah. So in a way, this, you could say, like reminder of his suffering, and the reminder of what's possible has been the gateway to his, as it were, liberation from his self-imposed cold prison. Yeah. So that's. Christmas Carol, and those are a few of the things I've drawn out of it. I hope it's been interesting to you.
I mean, it's just wonderful to sort of, for me, to hear it within a few weeks again, the story. And actually, what it reminds me of, a bit of Kesagatame. Because what these ghosts do is they give him all these opportunities to see, but he's got to work it out himself.
That's right, yeah.
Like with the dead body.
Yeah.
He's got to work it out himself.
Yes, all of it is just shown to him. In fact, sometimes the ghosts actually challenge him.
Yes.
There's one point where the ghost repeats his own words back to him about Tiny Tim. Because Scrooge sees Tiny Tim, this little boy, and so on. And he says to the ghost, "Is he going to die?" And the ghost repeats back to him something he had said himself about, well, if people want to die, they should die because it decreases the surplus population. You know, he'd say, when he was in his really cold-hearted phase, this is what he said to the the fundraisers, you know. So, you know, the ghosts are quite challenging to him in that way, repeating back his own words that he used when he was...
Also reminded me of Andy Mara as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because he obviously went through a tremendous transformation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And his sense of reputation, he had a bad reputation. He suffered from afterwards as well.
That's right, yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a really interesting bit of the story that I hadn't really thought about before, is that actually we all think of Scrooge as this miser, but actually the story is that he's not a miser. Mm. that's his reputation, as it were, but he changes completely, you know. It becomes something completely the opposite to that.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a spiritual death and rebirth, isn't it? Yeah. And it all happens in this kind of vision as well. You could say it was a dream, or it's hard to know how Dickens doesn't kind of say. Anyway, I think if you look at the Simon Callow thing now, you'll probably enjoy it more. It's on BBC iPlayer. Mm-hmm.